It's a Tuesday now, 26 minutes after the hour on a Transcendent Tuesday. Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas joins us now. Don is a biochemist, a member of the board at Creation Moments, and a whiz when it comes to COVID. We've talked several times about COVID and the vaccines and infections, and it's the big story in the news this year. By the way, David, you're with us, too. I didn't mean to ignore you there, David. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's okay. I've gotten used to it.
David's hurt so easily.
I've gotten used to it. I mean, I'll just go in the corner and sulk.
Okay. That's enough, David. Well, I'm in the middle of my introduction here.
Yes, you can jump into the conversation when we get into the meat of it, and then we'll ask you about the biochemistry of all of this.
Yes.
at the end.
See what you've learned over the past 8 years of conversations with Dr. Don here. We've learned a lot about biochemistry, and that's one of the things that makes us suspicious with all this news about COVID. And it's probably the number one news story that I've seen this week. Did it come to us naturally, transmitted by an animal of some kind to a human, and then it just ran wild? Or was it engineered in that Wuhan lab? And apparently there's some new evidence now out. I haven't seen the evidence firsthand, but there are a couple of accomplished doctors talking about, I guess they're doing research into the research that was done in Wuhan, and they can take a current edition of the virus and examine it. And Don, can they actually track back to see what might have been done artificially to develop a virus? Is that possible?
Well, there's certain telltale signs as to whether something was engineered or whether something occurred naturally. And they speak of one of the telltale signs in the article. Of course, they don't give you the exact importance as to why a particular sequence is important and why it probably was engineered as opposed to just naturally occurring. So actually, one of the best articles on this subject was written by, and this is, let me get his name, and I sent it to you some time ago.
Oh,
but,
okay.
This was by Nicholas Wade. I don't know if he still is one of the senior science editors for the New York Times, but he actually published his paper or his write-up about the origin of COVID following the clues, and then did an excellent article. It's rather long.
Yeah, I think I just found it here. So, the origin of COVID following the clues, he says. And the tale of two theories. Okay.
Yeah. So he goes through and says, okay, well, if it happened to be natural, then this is what you would expect to find. But let's see if it was, if it was engineered in the lab, what evidence do we have? And so he interviewed several doctors and scientists on the issue. And one of the main points is in favor of being engineered is this furin sequence. So furin is an enzyme that cleaves proteins at a very specific point. It has to have the sequence proline, arginine, alanine. So that's the amino acid sequence. And then, of course, the amino acid sequence, in order to get that amino acid sequence, you have to have certain DNA, RNA codes for that particular protein sequence. And therein lies the secret, if you will, as to whether or not this particular virus was engineered. And it turns out that let me back up a bit.
And by the way, I put the link to Nicholas Wade's article in the chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com. If anybody wants to kind of follow us here, okay, Don. Sorry about the interruption.
Okay.
There.
Yeah, and I'm really skipping over a lot of the preamble, if you will, to his article and everything. We'll get to some of that later, but the the main point, COVID-19 or SARS-2, as it's also called. You know, of course, everybody knows about the spike protein, and the spike protein is the protein that actually binds to the cells. Well, it actually binds to a specific receptor on the cells called ACE2, and the spike protein is made up of two proteins, the two subunits. One is the S1. Which is the binding subunit, and the other is S2, which is the protein that actually helps get the virus into the cell. So spike 1 is the binding, and S2 is the kind of the promoter protein that actually gets the virus into the cell. Now, in order for the S2 to work, you have to cleave the two subunits. So the spike protein, you know, by itself, just because the virus binds to virus particle, I should say, binds to the cell, then it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be infective unless it gets into the cell. So in order for it to get into the cell, the S1 and S2 proteins have to be cleaved. Therein lies the secret to the origin of this particular virus. And the cleavage point in this virus is a furin cleavage point, that is the proline arginine alanine sequence. No other coronaviruses have a furin cleavage point, so that's one clue. But more importantly is the DNA sequence or the RNA sequence that codes for the arginine, and hence the discussion in the other article you provided. And that sequence is a cytosine guanine guanine, which codes for the arginine.
That's the CGG they talk about in the article then.
Yes, the CGG, those, of course, the letter codes for the base, the DNA base codes. And, of course, you know, the coronavirus is an RNA, so, but be that as it may, the sequence then is this CGG sequence. Now, the other problem, of course, and then so you have to ask the question, well, of the coronavirus, how much of the coronavirus, the arginines in the coronavirus, for example, what percentage of them code, use the code CGG? And you ask that question, and you come up with the answer, well, 5%. 5% of the genetic code, codes for the CGG. You say, okay, well, all right, it's possible that, you know, that could have then occurred naturally. But the kicker is that this is CGG and CGG. So it's a double CGG sequence. And then you ask the question, well, how much of the coronavirus, genome codes for a double CGG? And the answer is absolutely zero. So nowhere else in this coronavirus or any other coronavirus does the double CGG code for. Now, the other interesting aspect of this particular sequence. So, this furin cleavage point, that is the proline arginine alanine sequence, is between the S1 and the S2 subunits of the spike protein. So it is a human. The other interesting thing is, of course, that sequence, that RNA sequence or DNA sequence, is very common in humans, in the human genome, because furin is used to cleave all kinds of proteins and stuff, and so it's quite common in humans. Therefore, the humans would have the enzyme to cleave specifically at that point, whereas other animals and other organisms probably would not. Hence, another indication that if somebody's going to engineer this, they want to engineer it so that it's most effective in infecting humans as opposed to other animals and stuff. And so you want to use a cleavage segment that is quite common in the human genome, but not so common in the animal kingdom, for example, or the animal genome. And so that appears to be what was done here. It also is interesting that since 1992, for example, the virology community has known that the one sure way to make a virus deadlier is to give it a furin cleavage site at the S1-S2 junction in the laboratory. And this was written by Dr. Stephen Kay, who is one of the authors of the other article that you were, or the
so he has ample background in this to be considered credible.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, he's a virologist, and he would know, and he knows the literature and the history of this type of thing. And so, you know, he's saying, hey, you know, if you want to make this a humanized virus, this would be the best way to do it. And so now you have to go back and say, all right, so that might be some evidence. Is there any possible way that this could have naturally, you know, happened? Well, the chances of that, you know, as we said, it doesn't exist in nature like this, or at least we've never found one. And then the other thing you would have to say is, well, are there any precursors to this virus that we can locate? Now, with the SARS and MERS, for example, they found natural precursors to those viruses. That is, intermediates between, let's say, you know, the bat virus and the human virus. They have gone out and discovered that, here's an intermediate virus between these two that has the right characteristics and everything that could, lead to the conclusion that this was a naturally occurring type of virus that then mutated over time and became infective in humans. They have looked and have found no intermediate viruses for the bat, the original bat, and they know which original bat virus it was, and the human virus, the human Corona 19 or SARS-2 virus. And so we don't have any evidence that it naturally occurred, because if we did, it would have been widely published by this time. But we do have some other interesting facts, and that goes back to this whole thing about the Wuhan lab. Now, our own investigative, our own government's investigation into the possible origins of the virus. The original report was leaked, you know, recently, was that there were three individuals within the Wuhan lab that had, within weeks of each other, had flu-like, I mean, pneumonia-like symptoms, very, very similar to that of the coronavirus, and I mean, the COVID-19, and one of them actually died. And so it was strongly suspected that the virus leaked from the lab. Well, then you have to ask the question, was this Wuhan lab doing any type of gain-of-function research that might have led to, you know, a leakage of this type of a virus? Well, it just so happens that the SARS-2, or the Corona-19 virus, that the base of the virus, that is most of the virus except for the spike protein, you know, most of the virus came from a specific bat virus that was isolated by the viral group in this laboratory. And the person leading this, of course, was the bat lady, or Shi Zheng Li. It was the leader of the group that collected viruses, bat viruses, from caves of Yunnan in southern China. So one, and she collected hundreds of bat viruses from these caves. Now, these caves are located pretty far south from Wuhan. So if the virus naturally, you know, occurred, it would have occurred more naturally from the southern part of China rather than Wuhan. But that's not where it, you know, the source of the virus came from. It came from Wuhan, which happens to be the location of this lab.
Mm-hmm.
So the bat lady then, you know, collects all of these viruses. One of them was the base, if you will, the base virus of COVID-19. And, you know, she published data on that. And then as far back as 2015, she was given grant money from an organization called Eco Health Alliance, the president of which is Peter Daszak, and he's a main character in all of this. And Peter Daszak, who headed the Eco Health, was the go-between between the NIH, and in particular the infective division of the NIH, who is headed by Dr. Fauci himself. So Dr. Fauci then funds, gives grants to Peter Daszak's organization, Eco Health Alliance, and then Eco Health Alliance is now, you know, funding research at the Wuhan lab. Well, what type of research were they doing? Well, specifically, they were doing research to basically see, can we modify natural bat viruses to be more effective or infective in humans?
What for what noble purpose would they do that?
Well, so the whole purpose, of course, is to, in quotes, supposedly, to say, hey, if we can do this in the lab, then we can design things to prevent a pandemic from happening, like a vaccine. We can make a specific vaccine to that particular virus, and so we know how it happens, in quote, naturally, and so then we can then make vaccines to prevent it from ever, you know, happening in, you know, from a pandemic from ever happening. Well, that obviously, you know, was a big problem, because not only did they not do that, but they caused the pandemic, as it turned out. So she's making viruses, you know, they're clearly stated in her research grant proposals, which were funded by this Eco EcoHealth Alliance organization, which was funded by the NIH through Fauci's group, clearly doing gain-of-function research. And she later publishes information and collaborates with other people that, in particular, a fellow, Dr. Barak from the University of North Carolina, that shows her how to use the furin sequence, if you will, to make the virus more human infective. She collaborates with this fellow. He teaches her how to do this type of research. She then apparently does the research, comes up with a virus and inserts this sequence between the S1 and S2 spike protein subunit, and now we have a virus that's infective. She has the human cells, and she's doing the experiments on humanized mice cells that have the ACE2 receptor on their cells. So she can test whether or not the virus that she's creating is infective, for human cells. And so she's got all of the pieces that she needs in order to make this virus. And apparently she did make the virus. Now, we can't know this for sure because guess what? The Chinese government has shut down any type of investigation into the lab to determine whether or not she had the actual sequence of the Corona-19 virus. But based on all of this information, so you have two main facts here. One, you have this lady in her research group doing this type of research. There's another aspect of the research in that she was doing it in a Bio2 level secured area, which is not very secured. The biosafety level 2 is the equivalent to you going to the dentist and them wearing, you go into a relatively clean room. And, of course, they sanitize everything before you go in there, and they sanitize and sterilize their instruments and wear gloves and stuff. That's level 2, right? And so she should have been doing this work once she got the virus in a level 4, which is you suit up you don't just mask, you suit up completely, and everything is isolated. And you have isolation hoods and all this other stuff. She's not doing this research in that. She's doing it at a level 2, the same cleanliness, basically, as your dentist's office. And it's highly probable that it leaked from the lab, from her researchers, unfortunately, who got the virus and got sick, and then, of course, exposed other people to it, like their family members, who then exposed other people, and we're off and running now with the pandemic. And of course, China doesn't close down, their airports or anything. It's the New Year, and people are coming from all over the world to the Chinese New Year, and then it's being spread, and we know the rest of the story.
Well, Don, does any of this now? So, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence, and now apparently there's some scientific evidence that this is man-made. Is there evidence that speaks to their intent? I mean, why create a monster and then have to create an antidote? I mean, an unnatural robot, a Godzilla kind of creature that doesn't exist naturally. And then and the reason you do that is so you can prevent such a thing from being a problem. That sounds a little far-fetched to me. How likely do you think this is the result of biological weaponry research?
Oh, I think it's highly probable that was the original intent. Now, they disguised it as, oh, we want to, of course, if you're developing a bioweapon, you want to have an anti-bioweapon at your disposal, right? This was the basis of a story of a movie several years ago. It was called V for Vendetta. You know, if the audience, you know, want to get a hint as to, wow, we're watching this film play out in real life. It is that movie that is absolutely parallels what might have happened here. And unfortunately, you know, they didn't have the antidote ready. It leaked out before they developed it. But if you were to develop a bioweapon, you want to have an antidote to the bioweapon so that, you know, your government, your people survive, whereas your enemies, people, of course, die because they don't have the antidote to the lethal, you know, bio weapon that you've just you know, developed.
Do we have such an antidote?
Well, I mean, okay, you know, one would say, well, we've got the virus. I mean, we've got the vaccines now. Now it's interesting that the vaccines were ready within weeks. Within weeks, they already had identified the DNA sequence of for the spike protein, and had already manufactured, in at least in the laboratory, a vaccine against this specific spike, protein. Now, how could they have done that? Hadn't they already known about the research, you know, in the first place? Well, you know, the answer to that is, well, you wouldn't have known. But apparently, again, Fauci's lab and Fauci himself involved with it, because one of the vaccine manufacturer, Moderna, he's one of the holder of the patents to the vaccine. Oh, lo and behold, how about that? So all of this is very, while still circumstantial, points the finger that American money, dollars, were funding this type of research. Why were we funding it in China versus funding it here in the United States? The answer is, we were funding it here in the United States. And Congress said, wait a minute. This is really dangerous stuff. We're not going to fund this anymore. And so through the back door, Fauci decides that we're going to fund this over in China. They'll do the research. They've agreed to do the research, and we'll just help them build this lab and set them up, and we can continue our research over there. And so that's what it appears has happened. And this whole thing then, really speaks badly of Fauci's involvement, but this other guy, Desnack, involvement with the EcoHealth. It had happened to be Desnack who first said, oh, this couldn't have come from a bio lab. This wasn't engineered. So he wrote a letter, and then he collaborated with actually Kristen Anderson of the Scripps Research Institute, who wrote a letter in March 17, 2020, that's in the Journal of Nature Magazine, Nature Medicine, that stated that COVID couldn't have come from the lab. So, you know, he's very much involved. He doesn't want his research group, funding group to be tarnished, or his name to be tarnished. And so he gets scientists from Scripps, who he probably is funding as well, to try to derail this particular thing that it came from the lab.
This is a Frankenstein story.
Oh, very much.
From the beginning.
Very much. You wouldn't have thought that our government would have been involved with such things.
Mm-hmm. And the villagers are gathering with their pitchforks.
I think so. And their torches, and they're descending upon the castle. Hopefully all this comes out. I mean, it seems to be out, and the people who need to be in the know really are. And it's just a matter of people covering their sixes, I guess, now. That's pretty scary stuff. Don, thank you. Don is a biochemist, again, member of the board of Creation Moments. Their website is creationmoments.com, and there you will find a plethora a whole bunch, a whole slew of scientific information that speaks to the biblical story of creation. And you'll find it a neat place to explore. creationmoments.com. Don, thank you very much. Appreciate what you've brought to us today. And by the way, for those listening, there's a couple of links in our chat window at brokenroadradio.com. One to the Nicholas Wade article, the other to the Fox News article that spawned our discussion today. And you might be advised to especially read that Nicholas Wade article. It's not too deep. You can understand it and see what's going on, maybe, huh? And maybe speak up about it. Don, have a great week. See you next week.
Okay. Well,
Thanks so much, Don.
And you folks have a great week as well.